Thresholds may seem very high today. Keep in mind they are not adjusted upward for inflation. The Congressional Budget Office expects that the Cadillac plan tax will generate $32 billion, or about 3% of Obamacare's funding, during its limited 2 years of operation within the law's current budget, with $12 billion raised in 2018 and $19 billion raised in 2019, respectively. If, hypothetically speaking, this tax had been imposed in 2011 and generated a commensurate level of revenue each year, it would have raised $150 billion or more for Obamacare over a decade. Assuming Obamacare survives into the 2020s, the tax on Cadillac plans is likely to become one of the new healthcare system's biggest revenue sources. Beginning in 2012, employers will be required for the first time to list the value of the health insurance they provide on employees' IRS W-2 forms, documenting their earnings for the year. It's one small step from there to slap a new tax on healthcare benefits that have already been given income equivalency on paper by the government. On a positive note, having Americans see the price of their health insurance revealed with a specific number could be a good thing. Few people realize how much their coverage costs, as employers usually don't share this information with their workers. Many experts believe overuse of the healthcare system is one of the biggest factors driving up costs, and comes in part because many Americans don't pay directly for most of their healthcare. Attaching a hard number to the value of their benefits might help change this behavior for the better. Many Americans might be surprised to discover that, on average, employers pay about $13,500 per employee for health insurance, and that employees only pay about 30%, $4,000 on average, of the total amount in any given year. That's $333 a month per employee. Higher penalty for health savings account disbursement. To help fund the new healthcare system, Obamacare increases the tax penalty from 10 to 20% for non-allowable purchases made using tax-deductible funds in health savings accounts, HSAs, and flexible spending accounts, FSAs. The Congressional Budget Office expects this provision to generate a modest $1.4 billion to help fund Obamacare, leading some critics of the law to assert that this provision has more to do with limiting the freedom of Americans to make their own healthcare choices than with funding the new healthcare system. That argument has some merit, because as of 2011, HSA and FSA funds may only be used to buy prescription drugs, whereas in the past, they could be used to buy over-the-counter drugs as well. In other words, when someone who has one of these accounts goes to buy Advil or Tylenol, he or she will need to get a prescription from the doctor first in order to use tax-free funds. Many won't bother, as the visit to their doctor will cost them more in time and money than the amount they would save if they had a prescription in hand. The critics predict that this new tax provision will lead to more prescriptions written for over-the-counter drugs by doctors. They fear that it will also spur sales of prescription drugs, even when a cheaper, over-the-counter alternative will do. If this happens, consumer spending on drugs could increase because of the new law. New limits for flexible spending accounts. Beginning in 2013, employers will only be able to make tax-free contributions to an employee's flexible savings account up to $2,500 per year, whereas the amount they could contribute in the past was unlimited. The Congressional Budget Office expects this provision of the new law to generate $13 billion in funding for Obamacare over the next decade. But more importantly, it represents, like the new tax on Cadillac insurance plans, a restriction placed on employer-provided healthcare benefits, and as such, is more evidence supporting the case that Obamacare may undermine today's employer-based health insurance system. Excise tax on medical devices. Starting in 2012, Obamacare imposes a 2.3% excise tax on the manufacturer or importer of medical devices. Some devices are excluded, including glasses, contact lens, hearing aids, and other devices available for retail purchase. The new tax is expected to raise $20 billion over the next decade. Medical expenses deduction threshold raised. Today, Americans can deduct medical expenses that exceed 7.5% of their income from their taxes. That level increases to 10% under Obamacare. This provision of the new law takes effect in 2013, but will not be extended to senior citizens until 2017. It's expected to generate about $15 billion over the next decade, since fewer Americans will have expenses that exceed the 10% threshold. Tax on tanning salons. In order to simultaneously discourage unhealthy practices and raise revenue for the new healthcare system, Obamacare imposes a new 10% tax on indoor tanning services, which must be paid either by the tanning salon or the customer. This new tax is expected to raise about $3 billion in revenue over the next decade. Class funds counted as revenue. Although a further $70 billion is counted as revenue to fund Obamacare in the government's budgetary calculations, this money actually was projected to come from enrollee contributions into the now discontinued Class Long-Term Care Insurance Plan. In other words, it was not free and clear revenue at all, but money that would have eventually been needed to pay beneficiaries. This budgetary ledger domain might seem of minor importance, but it highlights the reality that the government's financial claims are not always what they seem to be at first glance. If we subtract this $70 billion from Obamacare's revenue total, as we should since class has been officially suspended, the real amount devoted to reducing the budget deficit is $73 billion and not $143 billion. Part 6. Looking Ahead. Chapter 16. Protect Yourself Against Obamacare. Now that we've gone through Obamacare piece by piece, you might be wondering what you can do to protect yourself from potential downsides of the new law, and on the flip side, how you might benefit from it. Here are a few suggestions. Check your eligibility for Medicaid. If you're living on a low income, the dramatic expansion of Medicaid under Obamacare could very well help you. At the very least, you should check to see if you are now eligible for the program. As we've discussed, a handful of states could refuse to loosen their eligibility requirements to enroll in Medicaid. If you happen to live in one of these states, the future is uncertain. You will probably receive financial assistance, but it may not be enough to make your coverage free. If you're in one of the 40 or more states that will expand their Medicaid enrollment in 2014, then you might be able to sign up for the program at that time. Under the new law, every American who earns less than 133% of the federal poverty level, that's $29,327 for a family of four in 2010, will be able to enroll. On the downside, if you live in a state like Minnesota that currently lets people into Medicaid above the 133% threshold, you might lose your eligibility. If you are currently in the program with an income above this level, you will in all likelihood be transferred to the health insurance exchange in your state, where you will receive a generous subsidy to help defray the cost of your coverage. This is a good deal, but not as good as Medicaid, which pays all of the cost. On the other hand, the private plan that you enroll in via the exchange may be more widely accepted than Medicaid by doctors and providers. Don't pay the individual mandate penalty unless you have to. Now that the individual mandate has been ruled constitutional by the Supreme Court, it is likely to be a part of our lives. But before you lose sleep about the financial penalty that it promises to impose on you if you don't obtain health insurance, you should first consider your own health insurance situation. If you have coverage, and 84% of Americans currently do, you won't have to pay any penalty because you comply with the law by that fact. If you are among the much smaller group of Americans who don't have health insurance, 16% of the population, including illegal aliens, you could still be eligible for Medicaid or subsidized coverage through your state's insurance exchange. Either alternative, where you will have to pay relatively little out of your own pocket, if anything at all, is likely to be a better option than paying the penalty. After all, when you buy health insurance, at least you get something for your money. When you pay the Obamacare penalty, you get nothing in return. If you make the determination not to get health insurance, the new law says you will have to pay a fine. Should you pay it? All of us should comply with the law. But having said this, it will probably be wise to see to what extent the fine is enforced before you write your check to the IRS. Because of the political firestorm swirling around the individual mandate, it might not be enforced at all. Keep in mind that the law empowers the Internal Revenue Service to confiscate individual tax refunds to force you to pay money you owe the government. It still remains to be seen whether or not Congress will actually fund this effort, however, as it will require paying the salaries of thousands of new Internal Revenue Service agents who have yet to be hired. Get OTC prescriptions if you use a health savings account. As of 2011, Americans who use health savings accounts, HSAs, or flexible spending accounts, FSAs, are no longer able to dip into these tax-free funds to pay for over-the-counter drugs like Tylenol and Tagamet. Under the new law, a doctor's prescription will be required for all OTC drug purchases in order to use HSA or FSA money to pay for them. So, if you use HSA or FSA and know that you will require certain OTC drugs in the future, for example, the OTC version of Claritin for your chronic allergy condition, you should try to get a prescription from your doctor in anticipation of your eventual need. Get approved preventive tests without being charged copays. Obamacare requires all insurance plans to cover so-called essential health benefits, and among these are preventive tests that the Government Task Force on Prevention has given an A or B certification. Visit the task force's website at https://epss.ahrq.gov, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, to see whether the preventive test you need is recommended. If it is, your insurance plan must pay for it without charging you a copay. Therefore, if you feel the need for an approved test, you should get it, as it will cost you nothing. This assumes, of course, that your employer's plan has not been granted grandfathered status. If it has, the new rule will not apply. Check to see if your employer has a personal wellness reward program. Under Obamacare, employers will be able to set up personal wellness reward programs within the insurance plans that they offer to their employees. If your employer has begun to use a wellness program, it could mean that you will have to pay higher premiums and copays than your coworkers if you don't meet the personal wellness standards established within your plan. You should check with your employer to see if it has set up a personal wellness reward program. If it has, you should think about how easily you'll be able to meet the wellness standard in the plan. If you believe you may not be able to meet it, you should ask for a special exemption that allows you to opt out of the program. Otherwise, you could end up paying premiums and copays that are up to 50% higher than your peers. Use the government's high-risk insurance pool if you need to. Although Obamacare required all insurance companies in September 2010 to cover children even if they had a pre-existing health condition, the same rule does not go into effect for adults until January 2014. If in the meantime you're not able to obtain health insurance because you have a pre-existing health condition, you have an alternative. The government has created a temporary high-risk insurance pool to help Americans in your situation between now and 2014. This is your best bet to obtain coverage during this time frame, and now is a good time to sign up. Enrollment in the high-risk pool has gotten off to a slow start, with relatively few people joining the program by the end of 2010. Premiums have been lowered as a result. If you're an early retiree under age 65, prepare to lose your insurance in 2014. With the creation of these state-based exchanges in 2014, many companies are expected to drop the insurance they provide to their early retirees under the age of 65. One big company, 3M, has already announced that it will do this because lower cost options will arrive with the exchanges. Once these are up and running, you will probably need to use them to buy your health insurance. Medicare Advantage enrollees might need to find an alternative. Given Obamacare's reduction of the Medicare Advantage budget over the next decade, some insurers may decide to drop out of the program. If this happens, enrollees will have to look elsewhere for supplemental coverage to their basic Medicare benefits. You should plan for this possibility if you currently are part of Medicare Advantage. If you're a high earner, talk to your accountant. High earners are specifically targeted by Obamacare as a revenue source to fund the new healthcare system. The money will be generated by new Medicare contribution taxes relating to hospital insurance and investment income, with individuals who make more than $200,000 per year and couples who earn at least $250,000 having to pay more than in the past. Although it will be difficult to avoid these new taxes if you fall into this group, you should nonetheless talk with your accountant to determine the best approach to dealing with them, assuming there is a best approach. Small business owners should calculate health-related costs of new hires. Because Obamacare gives a substantial tax credit to small businesses that employ 25 or fewer people, the owners of these enterprises should think carefully about whether or not they should expand their workforce. The full tax credit is available for those businesses with 10 or fewer workers, so there is now less incentive to hire more than 10 employees than there was in the past. Whether or not such a decision makes financial sense for your business is a calculation you'll have to make on your own. If a significant number of small businesses choose to limit their employees because they are incentivized by the tax credit to do so, the nation's overall employment outlook could be hurt. And if it is, Obamacare will generate another unwelcome, unintended consequence. Stay informed. Under our system of government, laws aren't written in stone. Congress can modify or repeal them. The president can refuse to enforce them, and the courts can strike them down, and election results can change both the nature and implementation of laws. Like any other law in the initial period after its enactment, Obamacare lives in a fluid state. It's likely that new developments will cause the law to mutate into something different from what it is today. You can continue to get the latest updates on the Obamacare law and its impact on you by signing up for a free email alert by going to www.survivingobamacare.com. This book paints a picture of Obamacare in the middle of 2012. You will need to pay attention to the news in the days ahead to take note of important changes as they come along. To paraphrase Bette Davis's famous advice in the movie All About Eve, buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Chapter 17. Latest Developments. July 1, 2013. Ever since Obamacare was signed into law in early 2010, critics of the nation's healthcare overhaul have prophesied that its sweeping reforms will have major financial impacts on the American people. Now, 3 years later, these predictions appear much closer to materializing, as the key elements of the nation's new healthcare system near implementation. The brunt of Obamacare will not be fully realized until January 1, 2014. But already, a wave of taxes and regulations have gone into effect this year. They include taxes on high earners and small businesses, 3.8% tax on investment income, 0.9% Medicare tax, 0.9% Medicare hospital tax, limits on medical spending by individuals, flexible spending account cap restricted to $2,500, medical expense deduction threshold increased to 10% of income, taxes on healthcare industry, 2.3% tax on revenue generated by sale of medical devices, fines of up to 1% on hospitals for excessive readmission of Medicare patients. As the tentacles of Obamacare rapidly spread into our lives and throughout the American economy, protests have increased from those hurt by the new law. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, the administration's point person in charge of implementing the law, has turned a deaf ear to the clamor, offering only surprise at how opposition to Obamacare has persisted. In early 2013, Sebelius said, "The politics has been relentless, and that continues. There was some hope that once the Supreme Court ruled in July, and then once an election occurred, there would be a sense that this is the law of the land, let's get on board, let's make this work. And yet we will find ourselves having state-by-state political battles." Those battles are likely to continue into next year, when another wave of Obamacare mandates and regulations take effect, and as many as 30 million uninsured Americans gain health coverage with the expansion of Medicaid and the opening of health insurance exchanges across the country. To keep you abreast of the major changes in the healthcare landscape, here are the biggest developments since the fall of 2012. Essential benefits defined. Beginning in January 2014, all individual and small group insurance plans will be required to cover what the government calls essential health benefits. The Department of Health and Human Services has defined these benefits as falling within 10 broad categories that insurers must cover. 1. Ambulatory patient services. 2. Emergency services. 3. Hospitalization. 4. Maternity and newborn care. 5. Mental health and substance use disorder services, including behavioral health treatment. 6. Prescription drugs. 7. Rehabilitative and habilitative services and devices. 8. Laboratory services. 9. Preventive and wellness services and chronic disease management. 10. Pediatric services, including oral and vision care. While all states in the country must offer essential benefits in each of these categories, the White House has decided to give individual states some flexibility in determining what benefits will be included within the individual coverage silos. It does this by allowing each state to set its own essential benefits coverage level based on the benchmark of what has been typical in that state. For example, some states under the new Obamacare mandate may cover treatment by chiropractors, but some may not, because such coverage was not the norm in their state. In most cases, the largest plan by enrollment in the state's small group health insurance market will establish the state-specific benchmark required under the new law. According to a Heritage Foundation brief, the essential benefits framework now in place is unfair. That's because states that have traditionally mandated generous insurance benefits are rewarded more than those that have not. These generous states will be able to offer more benefits because their benchmark coverage levels will be higher. The additional benefits will be financed by the federal government via the subsidies granted to individuals below a certain income level who utilize the new health insurance exchanges in these states. This variance in essential benefits among the states will be permitted for at least 2 years. But beginning in 2016, individual states will have to pay for insurance benefits it mandates beyond what the federal government requires. To prevent states from mandating more benefits to take advantage of this loophole in the law, the Department of Health and Human Services has said that only state mandates in place prior to 2012 may be used for benchmarking purposes. Health insurance exchanges. With health insurance exchanges scheduled to open for enrollment on October 1, 2013, many are wondering whether the White House will be able to meet this deadline. HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius insisted in mid-April that the exchanges will open on time. In testimony before a congressional committee, she said that no backup plan is in place if there are delays because the Obama administration is determined and on track to meet the October 1st deadline. Despite this public reassurance, skepticism remains high, even among Democrat congressional leaders and key Obamacare supporters. Although the language of Obamacare envisions the federal government operating some exchanges, which will be in full effect on January 1, 2014, the law's authors did not anticipate that HHS would need to build and manage them for more than half the states in the country. As a consequence, the law did not provide funding for this large undertaking. The White House has requested an additional $1.5 billion to help build the infrastructure for the federally run exchanges, but thus far, Congress has not approved the money. Despite scarce funds, Sebelius has said that her department has done an extraordinary job and will use existing resources in the current HHS budget and from a $1 billion account created to cover unanticipated costs that would arise during implementation of the law. Building and managing health insurance exchanges for half the country is a monumental task in itself. But the job is complicated by the fact that, unlike state-based exchanges that can limit the number of insurance plans offered to consumers, the federal exchanges are open to any insurance plan that meets the eligibility requirements. Because of this, federally run exchanges will likely have to manage many more plans than their state-based counterparts. Exchange application process. On the consumer side of the equation, there are even greater complexities. That's because every American who buys an insurance plan through an exchange must first have his or her citizenship verified by the Department of Homeland Security. Once this is accomplished, the Internal Revenue Service must then verify income to determine eligibility for Medicaid or financial subsidies. The process begins when a person submits an application to the health insurance exchange in their state. Initially, the Department of Health and Human Services created a 21-page form to gather an applicant's information. But after complaints that the form was far too long, it was shortened to 3 pages. The new application requires the following types of information: name and personal facts, address, social security number, date of birth, etc. Health status, pregnant, physically or mentally impaired, etc. Employment status and income level. Current health insurance coverage, if any. Permission to give authorized representative or navigator access to information provided in application. With millions of Americans submitting applications to determine their eligibility for Medicaid and subsidies, an immense amount of data will need to be sifted, sorted, and directed to the appropriate regulatory agencies. To manage this task, the Department of Health and Human Services has created a federal data hub that will operate as the nerve center of the complicated process. Consumer support. The simplified three-page application form will make it much easier for Americans to sign up for insurance. But it remains to be seen how many will reach the point where they will have to fill out the application. According to an April 2013 poll by the Kaiser Health Foundation, 42% of Americans did not even know that Obamacare was the law of the land, much less that they might soon find themselves filing a form to determine their eligibility for free or subsidized health insurance. Widespread ignorance about Obamacare persists, leading Democrat Senator Jay Rockefeller of West Virginia to remark that the new law is probably the most complex piece of legislation ever passed by the United States Congress, and that its mountain of details are just beyond comprehension. Cognizant of the giant knowledge gap that exists among the American people about Obamacare, the White House is planning a large marketing effort to raise consumer awareness in the months leading up to the October exchange enrollment. The federal government also plans to hire tens of thousands of navigators to help Americans when they go to an exchange to buy health insurance. These navigators will act as counselors, providing guidance and answering questions. The exact number to be hired is not known, but could tally well over 100,000. California alone wants to hire 21,000. Rate increases. Obamacare taxes, mandates, and regulations were created to fund the new health care system and to expand coverage to 30 million uninsured Americans while simultaneously guaranteeing more health insurance benefits for everyone. The price tag of this well-meaning plan was thought to be manageable by the law's authors, but insurers are now raising premiums to cover their additional costs. As a result, many will have to pay more for health insurance, and those who have employer-based policies may lose their coverage altogether if companies decide to stop providing insurance to save money. The trend in this direction is already evident and will likely gain momentum as Obamacare takes full effect in early 2014. For instance, a report issued in April by the Robert Wood Foundation revealed that annual family premiums for employer-based insurance in California skyrocketed to $14,828, rising by a whopping 146% compared to the prior year. As the cost side of the seesaw goes up, the coverage side will inevitably go down. Over the last decade, employer-based coverage as a share of California's health insurance pie has decreased from 62% to 53% today, and the erosion is not likely to stop. Because Obamacare is forcing insurers to provide more benefits, they are naturally passing the cost on to businesses that provide coverage to their employees and to individual Americans who buy it on their own. Subsidies provided through the health insurance exchanges will help offset these higher costs, but millions of Americans will not be eligible to receive them. According to an exhaustive study by three congressional committees, estimates show some Americans facing startling premium increases of 203% because of the law. Their report, The Price of Obamacare's Broken Promises, says several factors are driving up insurance costs, including the Obamacare mandate that flattens out premiums for all Americans, regardless of their likely medical expenses in the future, which in turn will sharply increase premium costs for those under age 50. Obamacare's essential benefits mandate, which forces consumers to buy types of coverage they may not want or need. New taxes and fees that add $165 billion onto the shoulders of insurers, drug makers, and medical device manufacturers. Shifting insurance coverage. Because of the pressure on health insurance premiums from Obamacare rules and regulations, many employers may drop coverage for their workers in the near future. If they do, a large and unexpected influx of consumers could overwhelm the exchanges. This possibility has not gone unnoticed in Washington. The Congressional Budget Office, which initially anticipated that 3 million workers would lose their insurance because employers will drop coverage, now estimates 8 million Americans will be affected. Its estimate of the number of people using the exchanges by 2018 has also increased to 26 million from its earlier projection of 24 million. But even as concerns over discontinued coverage grow, some are wondering if the exchanges will fail to attract the projected number of customers, at least in the short term. That's because many young Americans may refuse to buy health insurance and instead opt to pay the fine imposed by the individual mandate. Avig Roy of Forbes has argued that the individual mandate will not work as envisioned. He cites a Congressional Budget Office report that estimates that only about half of the 12 million people who will be subject to the $695 fine imposed in 2014 for being uninsured will actually pay it. And among those who do pay, many will do so because it makes much more sense to pay the $695 fine instead of spending 10 times that on health insurance. If Roy is right, the consequences for the new healthcare system will be significant. Its stability is based on the assumption that millions of young, healthy Americans, whether they get health insurance or pay the fine, will subsidize the care of older and sicker citizens who need it more. For health insurance to remain financially viable over the long term, the risk pool that funds it must be properly balanced so that enough money comes in to make up for what is paid out to beneficiaries. With too many older and sicker participants, an insurance risk pool will inevitably enter what industry experts call a death spiral, which leads to bankruptcy. Early insurance renewals. In April, the Los Angeles Times revealed a significant loophole in the Obamacare law that permits individuals who renew their health insurance plan in 2013 to avoid the impact of rising premiums until at least January 1, 2015, a year after the full force of Obamacare kicks in. According to the story, large insurers United Health Group and WellPoint are now considering whether to give their policyholders this early renewal option. The option is especially attractive to individuals and families whose income is at least 400% above the federal poverty line, consequently disqualifying them from receiving a federal subsidy if they attempt to buy through an exchange after January 1, 2014. Dan Honey, an insurance compliance official in Arkansas, told the Los Angeles Times that for those folks who don't qualify for subsidies, this is a consumer-friendly thing because the premium rates for 2014 will be substantially higher. You will be exposed to rate shock. The early renewal loophole remains open for the time being, but insurance companies have not yet announced whether they will permit current policyholders to use it to shield themselves from a rate shock in 2014. Doctor shortage. A survey in early 2013 by the Deloitte Center of Health Solutions revealed that 62% of physicians believe that many of their colleagues will retire earlier than planned in the next 1 to 3 years. The overriding reason for the potential exodus is the belief among many doctors that the future of the medical profession may be in jeopardy as it loses clinical autonomy and compensation. As discussed elsewhere in this book, the addition of 30 million more Americans to the roles of the insured, coupled with a wave of doctors retiring early due to Obamacare, will likely lead to a significant doctor shortage. While health insurance will expand across the country in an absolute sense, it won't mean as much as it used to, with many Americans forced to wait longer to see their doctor or unable to get care from the doctor of their choice. shop exchanges. In April, the White House announced that the Small Business Health Options Program, better known as the SHOP exchanges, will not open for enrollment as planned on October 1, 2013, at least in those parts of the country, 33 states, that will have their exchanges run by the federal government. In the remaining 17 states and the District of Columbia, the SHOP exchanges should be fully operational. SHOP exchanges are marketplaces where businesses with up to 100 employees can purchase health insurance for their workers. Within their framework, an employer could buy a particular tier of insurance coverage at either the bronze, silver, gold, or platinum level, and then allow their workers to choose the specific insurance company to buy from at that level. Well, all the SHOP exchanges should be open for enrollment on October 1, 2013. Workers won't have the ability to choose from multiple insurance companies until January 1, 2015, from all the 33 federally run exchanges. Until then, small businesses will still be able to buy insurance, but their workers will not have a choice. They will be compelled to buy coverage from the one insurance company that the employer has chosen. In the SHOP exchanges that are not run by the federal government, the 17 states and the District of Columbia will be able to decide on their own whether to delay the worker choice option. Small Business Medicare Tax. In 2013, the wages of individuals and the profits of self-employed individuals making more than $250,000 in taxable income will see their Medicare hospital tax rise from 2.9% to 3.8%, an increase of 0.9%. While this tax will cost high earners, it will also hurt small businesses, since many of them file their profits as personal income. The IRS classifies taxable income for small businesses as profit in excess of expenses, as well as deductions for tax credits provided by Obamacare and money that is reinvested into the business. Small Business Employer Mandate. Obamacare will likely have a dramatic effect on staffing decisions made by small businesses. That's because the law mandates that companies with 50 or more full-time employees must provide affordable health insurance to their workers or pay a penalty of at least $2,000 per employee. The first 30 workers are exempt. Coverage is deemed affordable if it is not above 9.5% of a worker's gross income. The law defines a full-time employee as one who regularly works at least 30 hours per week. If the employee works fewer hours in some weeks of the year, he or she is still classified as full-time. With this fine hanging over their heads, many small businesses are considering reductions in the number of hours their employees work, and some big businesses, which face similar fines, are taking the same steps. In April, the nation's largest movie theater chain, Regal Entertainment Group, announced that it would be cutting back the hours of thousands of its workers to get below the 30-hour threshold. Two big restaurant chains, Applebee's and Olive Garden, have announced a similar scale back. A manager at Regal condemned the new rule, telling Fox News, "Mandating businesses to offer health care under threat of debilitating fines does not fix a problem, it creates one. It fosters a new business culture where 30 hours is now considered the maximum in order to avoid paying the high costs associated with this law." How many businesses will be affected by the rule? According to a survey by the Kaiser Foundation, about 9 in 10 businesses with more than 50 employees already provide health insurance coverage to their workers. In comparison, only about 6 in 10 with 50 or fewer workers do the same. Angered by the Obamacare rule, the National Federation for Independent Business has publicly complained that the law will stifle the growth of small businesses by penalizing them $40,000 or more if they cross the 50-worker threshold. It says that it will force some businesses to fire workers, not hire ones they might otherwise employ, reduce work hours across the board, or outsource work to external contractors. It points out that the rule also will impose more administrative costs. Medicare readmission fines for hospitals. An overlooked but important new provision of Obamacare fines hospitals if they readmit too many Medicare patients within the first 30 days after their discharge. Hospitals that violate the new regulation now face a fine of up to 1% of the Medicare reimbursement payments they receive from the government. By the end of 2015, the maximum fine will reach as much as 3%. In 2012, Obamacare fined more than 2,000 hospitals for excessive Medicare readmissions, fines that added up to nearly $300 million. The new regulation has led some to worry that it will give hospitals a financial incentive to turn away Medicare patients who really need to return to the hospital for care. It has also raised concerns that the regulation will have a disproportionate effect on minorities and the poor. Data from the Kaiser Foundation indicates that a disparity of this kind is already happening. Its numbers reveal that of the readmission fines levied in 2012, 76% were imposed on hospitals that serve low-income communities, while only 55% were imposed on those that serve middle to high-income communities. Medicaid expansion. The decision of the Supreme Court to uphold Obamacare in June 2012 gave states the power to choose whether or not they wanted to expand Medicaid as stipulated by the law. Many observers at that time predicted predominantly Republican states would say no to the expansion, given their loud opposition to the new health care law. To some extent, this prediction of stiff resistance has proven true. According to a report published by the New England Journal of Medicine in January 2013, 13 Republican governors had expressed opposition to the idea of expanding Medicaid within their states, a level of resistance that made it unlikely Obamacare would reach the goal of getting 15 million uninsured Americans onto the Medicaid rolls. Since the beginning of the year, however, the opposition from Republican governors has softened considerably. The first crack in their united front came in February, when the Ohio Governor John Kasich announced that he would take federal money to expand Medicaid within his state. Next came Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, followed by Republican governors in Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, North Dakota, Florida, and New Jersey. Why has opposition among Republican governors evaporated? The most obvious reason is money. The first 3 years of Medicaid's expansion under Obamacare will be funded 100% by the federal government. That's a sweet deal from any angle, and even fierce opponents of the new law find it difficult to turn down. Florida Governor Rick Scott's decision to support Medicaid expansion is a case in point. He told the Obama administration that he would agree to support the plan, but only during the first 3 years when the federal funding was 100%. In years after, it shrinks to 90%. The White House agreed to his condition, and to another more important one: granting Florida a waiver to use federal Medicaid dollars to buy health insurance for its residents outside of the Medicaid program. In other words, Scott was allowed to privatize Medicaid within his state. Giving Republican governors more flexibility to use federal Medicaid dollars as they think best for their states is a change of direction for the Obama administration, but one that became necessary after the Supreme Court decision. The White House is now engaged in negotiations with other state governors to adopt similar privatization schemes in return for their support, increasing the likelihood that more Republican governors will get on board the Medicaid expansion train. Staunch opponents of Obamacare remain, most notably in the governor's mansions of Texas and Louisiana, where Rick Perry and Bobby Jindal continue to hold out against making any kind of deal with the White House. Even their opposition may have limits, however, since the Obama administration's willingness to permit privatization of Medicaid within state borders goes a long way toward meeting Perry and Jindal's stated desire to have federal Medicaid dollars sent to the states in the form of block grants, large federal grants to regional government with only general spending restrictions. High-risk pool. In February, the Obama administration closed the government-subsidized high-risk pool insurance that was made available to Americans with pre-existing conditions who could not get insurance because their applications had been rejected by health insurers. As of January 1, 2014, insurers can no longer use this justification to refuse to sell insurance policies to these consumers or charge them higher premiums. The Obamacare law originally intended high-risk pool insurance to be available for all of 2014, but the $5 billion in funding that was made available to support the program is no longer sufficient to cover the costs of additional enrollees, forcing the government to shut down the program 10 months before its planned conclusion. Right now, about 100,000 Americans participate in the program. Their insurance will not be affected by the early closure, but no more enrollees are allowed in at this time, making the uninsured with pre-existing conditions wait until January 2014 to obtain the insurance. The $5 billion in funding for the program was depleted faster than anticipated due to the high cost of care per beneficiary, which has now exceeded $32,000. The actual number of enrollees has been much lower than expected because of the high cost of premiums that participants must pay. Initially, the government believed that as many as 350,000 enrollees might join the program, raising fears that the high-risk pools would be swamped. New $63 per worker fee. In early 2013, many businesses were surprised to learn that they would be hit with a $63 fee for each of their workers. While this does not sound like a lot of money, it adds up to a large cost for big businesses. For instance, the aircraft manufacturer Boeing will be charged $25 million next year because of its 400,000 labor force. The fee is being imposed to create a large fund of money to help insurance companies offset the cost of covering those who have pre-existing conditions. In the past, insurers would have rejected these individuals because they were a bad financial risk. But now, because of the new Obamacare pre-existing condition rule, they are forced to offer health insurance to all Americans regardless of their health status. The White House says the $63 per worker fee is a temporary assessment levied for 3 years only, and that it will decline in 2015 and 2016 before being phased out the year after. Contraception mandate. The controversy surrounding Obamacare's requirement that all employers provide free birth control to their employees continues to swirl, with the issue now working its way through the nation's court system. To date, 60 nonprofit organizations and private companies have filed lawsuits objecting to the regulation as a violation of their religious freedom as guaranteed by the Constitution. The White House's efforts to address the issue have done little to suppress the anger of those who believe the choice to provide contraception without a copay should be made by the employer. The administration has exempted religious organizations and nonprofit groups affiliated with them from paying directly for contraception, but the insurance companies involved must nonetheless provide it without a copay using a separate insurance policy. No exemption exists for private companies that object to the contraception mandate, leading some of them to file suits in federal court over the issue. Seneca Lumber, a small business in Pennsylvania that employs 22 people, won its case in April when a federal district court judge ruled in its favor. Tom Monahan, founder of the Domino's Pizza chain, also won his case against the regulation in a Michigan federal court. In Missouri, however, a federal judge ruled to uphold the contraception mandate. The controversy surrounding the regulation and contradictory rulings in lower federal court means that the issue is likely headed to the Supreme Court. Until then, the contraception mandate is pushing ahead and will begin to be enforced, barring any action by the courts in the meantime. What's ahead for Obamacare? Here are some key dates to keep in mind as Obamacare continues to roll ahead toward final implementation. October 1, 2013. Health insurance exchanges begin to take applications. January 1, 2014. Insurance policies sold on exchanges take effect. Medicaid expands in most states in the country. Mandates take effect, including those compelling insurers to provide coverage to those with pre-existing conditions. The individual mandate imposes fine on Americans who do not have health insurance. The employer mandate imposes fine on businesses with 50 or more employees that do not provide affordable insurance to their workers. January 1, 2015. Federally run shop exchanges offer consumers a choice between multiple insurers as opposed to only one. This has been Obamacare Survival Guide, written by Nick Tate, narrated by Kevin Pierce. Copyright 2012 by Nick J. Tate. Production copyright 2013 by Humanix Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.